To another location in Westminster, because we're not far away from this news conference getting underway, and there you can see them arriving there on stage. We have the Metropolitan Police, the Deputy Commissioner, we have the British Transport Police, we have the Ambulance Service, and we have the London Fire Brigade. So all of the emergency services there as we go to this news conference. We will carry it live here on this news special. So let's cross over and hear what they're going to say.
AC Brian Paddock will open proceedings. He will give you a brief update of the position. We will then hand over to representatives from the other emergency services, London Underground and Transport for London. At the end of this briefing, there will be an opportunity to take one-to-one questions, and there are opportunities afterwards for one-to-one interviews with the speakers.
Thank you. Good afternoon. The first thing to say is that the Police Casualty Bureau is now open for friends and relatives who are concerned about those who may have been killed or injured in the incidents today. The telephone number is 0870 1566 344. 0870 1566 344. In terms of what exactly happened this morning, at 8:51 this morning there was an incident at Moorgate, around Moorgate, Liverpool Street, Moorgate East underground stations. Confirmed explosion 100 yards into the tunnel from Liverpool Street station. It was believed that the train involved is either a Central or a Circle Line train, and there are 7 confirmed fatalities in that incident. At 8:56 this morning, at the King's Cross Russell Square, incident, again 21 confirmed fatalities in that particular incident. At 9:17 there was an explosion on a train coming into Edgware Road underground station, which blew a hole through a wall onto another train in an adjoining platform. In fact, it's believed that 3 trains were involved in that particular incident, and so far there are 5 fatalities in that particular incident. And then at 9:47, there was an explosion on a bus at Upper Woburn Square junction with Tavistock Place. There are fatalities in that incident, but at the moment we cannot confirm the numbers. So 4 devices, we believe, are involved in today's incidents. The police service received no warning about these attacks, and the police service has received no claims of responsibility from any group in connection with these attacks. This clearly was a callous attack on purely innocent members of the public, deliberately designed to kill and injure innocent members of the public. That's all I have to say at this stage, but I can answer questions afterwards.
Obviously, London's transport is facing some very challenging times at the moment. The underground won't be in action until tomorrow. The bus services, we hope, will come back on in central London later on this afternoon. And the overground stations, King's Cross, will be closed. Liverpool Street is currently closed. And Victoria is closed due to a bomb threat. We hope that will be open quite soon. The situation is fluid. There are a number of bomb scares, as one can understand at a time like this. But we're doing our very best with Network Rail and the other operators to open up the systems as best we can. And we'd like Londoners to start thinking about their journey home and to make sure they check whether the services are available, and then to start to make their way home. Obviously, we don't want a great rush out of central London, but it's going to be a very difficult evening to get people away. But I know that everyone will be working together to try and get people home as best we can. So our encouragement is to check on those systems, and then for people to start to make their way home as reasonably as soon as possible, without a great rush or going off at the same time from offices. So we'd ask people to think carefully about their journey back tonight.
The London Ambulance Service has been working alongside other emergency services throughout today to respond to the explosions across London. We have been assisting with the rescue effort and assessing and treating at all scenes to ensure that the patients received the medical attention they require. We have treated 45 patients with serious or critical injuries, including burns, amputations, chest and blast injuries, and fractured limbs. We have also treated approximately 300 patients with minor injuries, including lacerations, smoke inhalation, shock, cuts, and bruises. Patients with life-threatening or serious injuries were stabilised at the scene before being taken to hospital by ambulance staff from London Ambulance Service and other neighbouring ambulance services. Patients with minor injuries have been treated at the scene and, where needed, taken to hospital by non-emergency medical staff, voluntary aid ambulances, and indeed public buses. Hospitals who have received casualties include the Royal London Hospital in Whitechapel, University College Hospital, St Mary's Hospital in Paddington, and the Royal Free Hospital. Over 100 ambulance vehicles and more than 250 ambulance staff have attended the incident scenes, supported by staff in our control room. Over the course of this incident, many hundreds of calls were received by our control room staff. We are asking members of the public not to dial 999 unless they require treatment for life-threatening injuries at this time. Can we also ask that people do not go to their A&E departments at hospitals in central London until or unless absolutely necessary, so that those departments can continue to focus their efforts on treating casualties from this morning's incidents? Thank you.
The London Fire Brigade was able to receive the call at our regional control centre and respond quickly and effectively to the tragic events that unfolded in London today. These were, of course, the kind of events that London firefighters have been planning, training and equipping for, and today came the reality. Obviously, firefighters and the other emergency service workers witnessed some very harrowing scenes today, and they performed magnificently in the face of that challenge. Certainly, we would like to offer our condolences to all of those that have injured or lost loved ones. We still have firefighters at the scenes and are still assisting in the work they have to do, and we will be there as long as it takes and needs to be there. We attended with some 40 fire engines and specialist equipment designed just for this purpose, together with over 200 firefighters today in London.
These were my passengers. Let me tell you, all of us send our condolences out to their families and all those who are involved in this. When we, as the situation unfolded, we felt we had to shut down the system and remove people from the trains because we didn't know how many more incidents there might be. The staff performed magnificently. Well, of course, my staff had to deal with this in the 10, 15, 20 minutes before others could be there, and the reports I've gotten have indicated that the intense pride I should feel in about them. They've done a fantastic job. They did a very difficult job, and they did it well. We are now in the process of getting clearance from the police to getting out on the property to inspect all of the trains. Once the trains are inspected, we will try to get drivers to them and move them to depots so that they can be secured. Our ambition is to have a service for the morning. If we can, we will run some service late tonight on unaffected lines, such as the Jubilee, the Northern, and the Victoria, but it is unclear. It will all depend on whether we have the crews. Even when we start up tomorrow, though, keep in mind where these incidents occurred, which will no doubt be held as crime scenes for some time. We will not be able to run any service on the top side of the circle. So that means it's likely the H&C service will be out. Certainly there'll be no Circle Line service. We won't be able to run the Met past Baker Street, assuming we can get into Baker Street, and it will be, at best, a shuttle service on either end of the Piccadilly line. But we hope to run a full service everywhere else, and we're going to get this system up and running as quick as possible. Thank you.
On behalf of the Mayor, the Commissioner of Transport for London, and the whole of us at Transport for London, we send our condolences to everybody affected, and I send my thanks to the bus staff who've responded very well today. When the first incidents occurred on the Underground this morning, we opened the bus service to all tube passengers, but then, of course, a little later, we were advised by the police to withdraw the bus service out of Zone 1 substantially, which was done. The bus service is just starting to return to Zone 1. It will take some time to get back to normal, and as it gets back to normal, additional police officers, wardens and bus staff will be out to help at major points like Oxford Street and so forth for the evening rush hour. Clearly the bus service can't serve areas where the emergency services cordons are still there, and particularly in the sort of King's Cross, the Aldgate areas and around Russell Square. We will have to either institute diversions or curtailments, and we'll attempt to get details of those out as soon as we can. The bus service can cope with an awful lot of extra people, but it will be slow to get home. As Andy Trotter said, we would like people to stagger their homeward journeys because we clearly can't cope with everybody who would normally start off between 5 and 6 this evening. We will try to as hard as we can, and we'd ask travellers in London to bear with us and to bear with our staff, who I'm sure I know will rise to the occasion. Buses in London are currently being searched regularly, and certainly at each end of the journey, and that will continue until further notice. I should also say that the Docklands Light Railway is resuming. That on the roads, we have had messages up since early this morning asking people not to come to central London. They will be in place for the rest of the day, and the congestion charge was suspended this morning for the day. Thank you.
Clearly we are very concerned about those who've been killed and injured, and we are very concerned about the impact that this is having on families and friends. I have to say that since this conference started, unfortunately, the Police Casualty Bureau has developed a technical fault, and we would ask people to be patient with us while we try to rectify that fault.
Okay. We'll take questions now from the floor. Could you please raise your hand, identify where you're from and who the question is directed at? Thanks very much.
At the moment, we don't know whether or not this was suicide bombers or whether this was simply packages left on the bus and in the underground stations. It's too early to say. Again, there is no indication that these were anything other than conventional explosive, but other than that, we don't have any information about the size or type of device that was used. Clearly, we've had considerable success in the past using closed-circuit television footage in order to trace the movements of the people involved. That will be one of our first priorities, as well as securing whatever forensic evidence we can secure from the various scenes.
Question in the middle.
Can you tell us whether you've had made any arrests throughout the course of this morning in connection with this at all?
I don't have any information at this stage of any arrests having been made in connection with these incidents.
Question for the London Underground. Are there any people still trapped underground?
No. The system is clear.
And when were they last? How long did it take to evacuate?
Well, the entire system, almost all of the system was cleared within the first hour or two, but the people on the Piccadilly Line train, it took the longest to get them clear. There was difficulty getting access to all of them. I don't have an exact time when we got the last person off.
Do we have any estimate how many people died on the bus?
We don't have any information at the moment. We know that there were some fatalities, but we don't have any numbers at the moment.
Question at the front.
Penny Marshall, ITV News. Can you tell us at this stage how many members of the anti-terrorist squad are involved in the investigation and what they're doing, why they're not here?
Members of the anti-terrorist branch are fully involved investigating these incidents. That's why they're not here. I'm the spokesperson for them, as well as the rest of the Metropolitan Police Service. Their time is much more valuably spent investigating these incidents. We're not prepared to discuss how many detectives are involved in the investigation at this stage.
Question there.
Stuart Tendler from The Times. Should the security level have been higher today, given that it was the launch of G8?
The security level in London has been high over recent months. We have had all the security services actively engaged in anti-terrorism activity during this period. We have given advice and we have received cooperation from the transport services around raising people's awareness of the possibility of suspect devices. And so we are content that the security level was appropriate, even notwithstanding the fact that G8 is happening in Scotland.
Question there.
Sean Raymond, Sunday Telegraph. The security level was actually lowered within the last month to its lowest level since 2001. Can you comment on that?
The security level was lowered slightly from the very highest, other than having specific information about a specific target. It is at its second highest level, and we felt that that was appropriate in all the circumstances, bearing in mind all the intelligence that we were in possession of.
We're not going to start getting into risks, threats, or anything like that today. This is about actually telling you about the response to the operation. So I would appreciate if you could confine those questions to the response to the operation from the emergency services rather than the investigation stage. Thank you.
How many police officers have been involved on the ground in this morning's response? And are you recalling any officers from the G8 summit to help deal with this?
We've got about 1,500 Metropolitan Police officers deployed to Scotland. We have 31,000 police officers in London. We have more than enough police officers to cope with this sort of emergency. At this stage, we have used officers who were on duty during the course of these incidents, and we have not called officers in who were off duty before, because clearly this is going to take some time in order to restore London to normality, and clearly we have to bear in mind that we're going to have to bear in mind resilience in terms of keeping the policing going during this period. In terms of exact numbers, we haven't had a head count.
Simon.
The British Transport Police obviously attended these calls when they first came out, and it has put a great strain upon us, without a doubt. We have a number of officers in Scotland as well for G8. We won't be bringing any back from there, but we will be bringing as many officers as we can on duty in order to cope with the pressures we're going to face for the rest of today and into tomorrow.
Simon.
Andy Trotter and Brian Paddett, can I ask, what is your reaction basically to the fact that the nightmare scenario has happened? And what does that say about the counter-terrorism measures that have up to now been deployed?
Well, both the current Commissioner, Sir Ian Blair, and the previous Commissioner have said that London has always been a terrorist target. And we are clearly shocked by what has happened today, but we're not surprised at what's happened. We have worked over recent months and years with British Transport Police, with the City of London Police, with London Ambulance Service, and with the London Fire Brigade and all the other emergency services rehearsing and planning for exactly this sort of scenario. And so right from the word go, we were able to implement this well-rehearsed, well-planned incident response. And as far as the Metropolitan Police Service is concerned, that plan has worked exactly as it should have done.
I mean, very sadly, all the practice that we put in, all the London forces together, plus the other emergency services, the plans that we've worked on so hard were required today. And as far as that response is concerned, the response worked extremely well. But it's a very sad day that we had to actually bring this into play.
Question at the end.
Sally Jones, Dow Jones Newswire. A question for DC Paddock. Are you still looking for devices? Can you confirm this?
Clearly, we want to make sure that the transport system is safe, but otherwise, we don't have any intelligence that there is a threat from other devices. So, in the absence of any specific intelligence, we are nonetheless being very vigilant, as our colleagues have said from Transport for London, to make sure that, that buses and underground trains are searched before they're brought back into service.
Question there.
Jean Whalen with the Wall Street Journal. I just wonder, were there any power surges then, or what was that about this morning, the reports that there were power surges in the field?
I think Tim O'Toole can answer that question.
There were not power surges, but what happens is when you have an incident of this magnitude, its first manifestation is in the control rooms of the power, because the first thing that happens is the traction current is shut off. When it was, there was the read that there was power withdrawn at different places on the network, the assumption was by some people that there must have been a surge to cause so many breakers to trip out. Further information quickly came in that there was a derailed train at Edgware Road, and then speculation occurred that somehow that must have come in contact with the major power cable, and did that have an impact? And then the rumors just kept running. But there was never any power surge, and indeed, the traction current network to the underground is completely intact right now, and we could run a full service were it not for these criminal scenes.
I will get for as many questions as possible. One in the front row.
Andy Gardner, Sunday Mirror. Tim, 27 minutes between the first blast on the tube and the last blast. I know it was chaotic, but did you issue any warnings to your drivers?
It happened almost, our read was that it all happened within 3 minutes of each other. We didn't really have time. That was the report we had in the network communication center where we were.
John.
Two-part question. In broad terms...
Could I just further...
Sorry.
And once we had perception of what was going on, we immediately went to a code amber, which was to move all trains into platforms where we could, so that while we got a read on what was happening, we had a way to get people out with the least difficulty, so we wouldn't have to walk people through tunnels.
John Steele from the Daily Telegraph. Mr. Paddock, probably most appropriately. Two parts. Can you just say, is Scotland Yard treating this as a suspected Islamic extremist terrorist attack? And the second part is, can we have a little bit more detail about the location of the Piccadilly Line train, which direction it was going in, i.e. where was it between the stations, and also where was the Edgware train coming from? A little bit more detail on that.
The first thing I would say is that, as far as I'm concerned, Islamic and terrorism are two words that do not go together. There may be people who present themselves as Muslims who carry out these acts, but it is totally against what I understand to be the Islamic faith and what Muslims generally stand for. And anybody who professes to be a terrorist and somebody who believes in Islam, I think is sadly mistaken. However, we are treating this as a terrorist incident. We are keeping an open mind as to who the perpetrators might be. We have received no claim in terms of who is responsible. And so at this stage, we wouldn't speculate.
Tim, can you answer the questions about where the trains were?
The Piccadilly Line train was between King's Cross and Russell Square. The Edgware Road train was a Circle Line train. In fact, both incidents on the subsurface railway were Circle Line trains, and it was between Edgware Road and Paddington.
Okay, question there, please.
Rod Northern from Newsweek for Russell Smith. Is there any indication that any of the casualties caused by other than the explosions themselves, for instance, in the evacuation or subsequently?
It's early days to be able to answer that, but we don't have any evidence to suggest that at this stage, no.
Question at the front.
The rumours that a police sniper shot dead a suicide bomber at Canary Wharf, do you know anything about that?
We have no reports of any police sniper shooting dead anybody today.
Also, a group called Al-Qaeda Europe have been claiming responsibility. Are you taking that seriously on their website?
We understand that a group that are claiming to be linked to Al-Qaeda have claimed responsibility on the internet. We will be looking at that as well as any other leads, but at the moment we don't know whether that's a genuine claim or not.
Question at the back. Yeah, in the middle.
Can I ask Ken Knight if we could get some more detail on the rescue operation, please?
Yes, certainly. The fire crews were, of course, deployed in normal rescue mode. Weren't sure, of course, at first whether there was also fire involved, so were equipped to deal with fire in the underground. The planning that Tim O'Toole talked about of moving all other parts of the underground to their home stations helped immensely with evacuation. In the event there was no fire, no firefighting, but we deployed crews in breathing apparatus to undertake rescues because it was not only extremely difficult conditions, but a great deal of dust and dirt had been thrown up, of course, by this terrorist activity, and they were deployed with the other emergency services. The crews there worked exactly according to plan. I'm very proud of what they were able to do today, and I think we still have something like 20 fire appliances at the scenes, but I'm content now that we are now equipped and prepared and continue to be equipped and prepared, and from this experience we'll maintain a high level of vigilance in the event of such atrocity.
Question front.
Total Clayton, Sunday Herald for DAC Paddock. Could you clear up this question of a warning? AP reporting an official from the Israeli embassy in London saying that they received a warning from Scotland Yard a couple of minutes before an explosion, and as a result some of their government officials didn't go to a conference in London. Was there no warning or no intelligence at all?
The information I have at the moment is that there were no warnings given to the police at all.
And any intelligence? That something might happen today?
But the information I have at the moment is that there was no intelligence in our possession that these attacks were going to take place today, and we were given no warning by any organisation that this was going to happen.
How quickly then were other embassies of foreign governments alerted to the situation?
I'm not in possession of that information.
Okay. Stuart again.
Question to Mr. O'Toole. Can you say how many trains were affected by this incident this morning? Estimated how many passengers had to be decanted from the system?
Well, I don't have an exact count, but during the rush hour, we would be running usually around 500 trains. We move 3 million people a day. So it would be a very large number at that time of the morning. These trains probably had, the Circle Line trains probably each had around 700 people on them. The Piccadilly Line train probably had something like 900 at that time of the morning, but I don't have an exact count for obvious reasons.
Andrea.
Hi, Andrea Perry from the Sunday Express. This is for Tim O'Toole as well. There's two parts, actually. How many people are actually trapped underground? Have you got a figure?
Well, as I said, I was quite proud of the staff in that people were not trapped. It was about a controlled move of getting people off. There was a difficulty getting people off of the Piccadilly Line train. It was the only deep tube level train affected. The other two were subsurface trains, of course. And I don't have an exact number for how long people were stuck there.
One other question, I'm not sure you two really, but at any point was there a consideration to deploy the army on the streets, as happened before at Heathrow?
That is not part of the multi-agency plan that we have in London to deal with this type of incident.
Okay. Just a question for Mr. Smith. Ben Taylor from the Mail. Are there any children amongst the fatalities?
I don't have that information to hand, I'm afraid.
Do we have an age range for the fatalities?
We don't.
Question, were there any controlled explosions? And a second question, the emergency services and your staff, you say were very proud of the way they behave. What about the public? How did they cope in this nightmare scenario?
My report from my staff was that they did not confront any panic, that they were enormously impressed that people just evacuated the system and followed direction. You can imagine in the early moments of this, some of the horrific scenes, things that people never expect to see in their lives, and yet people just got on with it.
I can confirm that, because we had the Russell Square incident. It was very near our own British Transport Police headquarters, and we heard the bomb go off on the bus in Tavistock Square, and our officers were quickly out to deal with members of the public, many of whom were injured and were coming into our front counter for treatment. And I was impressed with just how calm people were in very, very traumatic circumstances.
I have no information that there were controlled explosions. There were a number of calls to suspect devices, but as far as I'm aware, no controlled explosions.
Okay, I'll take a few more questions. One at the back.
One more from the Wall Street Journal for Tim O'Toole. Can you give us more of a chronology of when this, the code Amber was activated, and you know, when the trains were actually stopped, when people started to leave, and what you were actually telling them over the loudspeakers? A friend told me first they were told it was a power surge, then they were told it was an emergency situation and get out immediately.
I don't have the time chronology with me, and I know that the police have one, but I can tell you, because I was there, the way the events unfolded is, as I said, we first had a detection that there was certain sections of the traction current went off, which usually indicates breakers firing, and that's when people thought there was a surge. Then we got the report of the derailment at Edgware Road. At that point, of course, we have a lot of people in tunnels. We're moving tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, and the last thing you do is freeze. You let the system keep moving until you get some further confirmation. Then as the more events came in and we got the word from the Aldgate area, at that point we put out a code Amber right away, moving people to the platforms, but not immediately instructing them to go out onto the street, because we still didn't know what we were dealing with. But within minutes after that, we did decide to evacuate the network. As I said, I'll be happy to put out the timeline. I'm sure it will be the subject of many investigations, but my perception of this was unfolding all within the first hour.
Neil Bennett
from the BBC. I'm not quite sure who this question should be directed to, but can I ask what precautions you're going to be taking to make sure that bombs don't get onto the tubes and buses tomorrow?
Certainly. Now, our officers will be working with Transport for London, with London Underground, searching, checking railway stations, platforms, carriages, trains, to make sure that the system is as safe as it possibly can be. Our officers, Metropolitan Police, City and British Transport Police, will be at all the mainline termini providing reassurance to the public. But the public need to remain vigilant. This is an extremely challenging time for London. We don't know if this is over yet. We've got to remain vigilant. The public have got to help the police and report anything that they see as suspicious to make sure we can deal with everything straight away. But we've got every resource out there at the moment, and we're doing our very best to keep London safe.
Can I say one of the reasons why it will take so long to bring our service back is that we are going to look at every inch of every train, and we're going to be inspecting all of our stations. And I can assure you there's no metro system in the entire world that knows more about this subject than the London Underground. And we will do everything to keep our passengers safe.
Question at the front.
Mr. Paddock, Derek Taylor from Sky News. Is there any indication that the bomb that went off on the bus was actually destined for another train station?
We've got no information at all at this stage. Clearly, a possibility could be that it was destined for underground, but on the other hand, it was 30 minutes after the other explosions. We don't know.
And do you actually know any more information about actual devices themselves?
We don't have any information other than they were conventional explosive. We don't know about the size of them. We don't know whether they were packages left or whether they were suicide bombers.
Right. Ian.
Ian Hepburn from The Sun. Are you going to, I'm not sure who this is directed at, but are you going to suggest that commuters just take the day off tomorrow and let things calm down?
No, I don't think we are suggesting that. What we're saying is going to be extremely tough getting home tonight, but I think all the operators are going to be working very hard to get the system back on tomorrow. There will be challenges, without a doubt. There will be problems. The sites of the explosions, obviously, services won't be running perhaps for some time. But nevertheless, you know, life must also carry on. But as I said earlier, if we all work together and if we're all vigilant then we can make London as safe as we possibly can so people can carry on about their daily business.
John.
Very briefly, Mr. Paddock. When you talk about conventional explosive devices, does the initial forensic examination suggest conventional high explosive devices?
No, what I mean is that there's no suggestion of any chemical or biological agent involved. It's simply explosives, but...
High explosive or homemade explosive or whatever.
John, that would be part of the investigation. We're not going to get drawn on that now. Okay. Question at the front. Thank you.
Nigel Morris from The Independent. Could you tell us, probably one for Mr. Paddock, at what point after 8:51, the series of events you've described, the emergency plan was implemented and what were its immediate priorities?
I don't know exactly when it was that we implemented the full operational plan. Clearly, we can deal with one of these incidents as an isolated incident, and we reacted immediately to that first incident. I would guess that it was sometime after the second incident that we realised that there was going to be a series of incidents to be dealt with. And it would be that at that time that people were then being drawn into the control room at Scotland Yard to take control of this and on a multi-agency basis.
I can confirm that within a very few minutes of it happening, all the emergency services plans swung into action with the control room at Scotland Yard taking command of the event. It was very obvious from the start that this was going to be a major incident and the plans were put in place straight away.
Could you just spell out to us what the priorities were? It was presumably to concentrate on the rescue operation.
Well, certainly from the police perspective, it was getting command straight away, getting a grip on the situation, getting people to the scene to find out exactly what was happening, to coordinate activities between the ambulance, fire and police, and to make sure that all possible action was taken to rescue people, to deal with casualties, to coordinate activity, and to make sure that we could deal with the injured as quickly as possible.
Question at the right.
Hi, Jonathan Leake here from the Sunday Times. Mr. Paddock, I wonder if you can tell us if there will be police riding on the trains over the next, well, tomorrow and the next 2 or 3 days, and whether also you'll be bringing officers in to assist the transport police to work in the stations and on the transport system.
Yeah, I mean, British Transport Police do ride the trains all the time, as well as patrolling the mainline stations and the underground. Plus our community support officers. They'll all be in high visibility clothes over the next few days. There'll be a lot of activity as we bring more officers on duty, including our search teams, our explosives dogs, and a whole range of different technical aids in order to keep the system safe.
I'll take two more questions, one at the front and the last one at the back.
Mr. Trotter, Derek Tedder from Sky News again. Can you just tell me what precautions are you taking for a chemical incident here? You know, we've heard that you've said this is a standard bomb in your eyes, but what precautions are you taking for any subsequent chemical attack?
We have highly developed tactical options to deal with chemical, biological or radiological devices. We've got all the state-of-the-art kit in order to go into the systems wearing that, as have the other emergency services. We do a lot of joint working with all the blue light services, and we're quite convinced that if we do have such an attack, we're capable of dealing with it.
Ken Knight.
Yes, just to confirm, London Fire Brigade, of course, is equipped and trained with such equipment for deployment and did deploy such equipment, but there is no suggestion, as has been said, that there was any CBRN nature of this terrorist attack, and we didn't have to deploy that equipment at all, but it was available and ready at each of the incidents.
Last question there, please.
Again, from the Wall Street Journal, for Mr. Paddock. Do you know whether the bombs were left in the tunnels or were on the trains? And also, how are your officers investigating this being organized? Are they staying in their normal units, or are you creating a new structure to deal with this investigation?
It would seem likely that the devices were on the trains, although that is to be confirmed by forensic examination. And we have... anti-terrorist squad officers and specialist crime directorate officers who deal with the most serious offences in London deploy to all of these scenes investigating what has taken place.
Okay, that's the end of this conference. Can I just say that while these people have been speaking, Casualty Bureau is now up and running. The telephone number is 0870 156 6344. But what obviously we don't want is an overload of the system again. So could we ask that people ring their family and friends first of all to see if they're safe and well before they contact Casualty Bureau? So the first point of call should be with family and friends on mobiles or via landlines to make sure they are well and safe before they call Casualty Bureau. That would assist us greatly. I don't think we'll be planning any more press conferences here tonight. However, we will keep that under review. It is likely, though, that we will run a press conference tomorrow morning or sometime tomorrow, and that, again, will be based here at the QE2 Centre. Thank you very much.
And that ends that news conference there. You're watching a BBC News special with Hugh Edwards and John Sopel. The main points of that news conference: at least 33 people have been died in the series of explosions that took place this morning. Three on London's tube network, one on a bus. The first between Liverpool Street and Aldgate East, at least seven people were dead in that, in a blast 100 yards from Liverpool Street station. Between Russell Square and King's Cross, there were 21 fatalities. At Edgware Road, five died, and they are saying there were fatalities when the number 30 bus in Woburn Place with the junction of Tavistock Square was hit, but they're not saying how many people died. And they're talking about the massive rescue operation that then unfolded, involving something like 100 ambulances, 400 casualties, and a number of hospitals in London putting on their emergency plan to cope with the sheer scale of what unfolded just after the morning rush hour in central London.
So here we are, some 7 hours.